Minnesota Reads on KUMD is produced with funding provided in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Good morning and welcome to Northland Morning. This morning we are in welcoming Shannon Gibney to Minnesota Reads. Her book is called What God Is Honored Here, Writings on Miscarriage and Infant Loss by and for Native Women and Women of Color. Shannon, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us today.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Talk a little bit about where the impetus from this book comes from, and you, a person, can probably draw the conclusion that it's really not a happy story.
Yeah, I had a stillbirth about 6 years ago at 41 and a half weeks. So my baby was 10 days late. So this book is sort of, you know, a tribute to her and a tribute to all women who go through this experience. What I found, and my co-editor, Kao Kalia Yang, who had a miscarriage at 19 weeks about a year before me, what we found is that not only is there cultural silence around this issue, but particularly for those women who are on the margins of U.S. Culture and society, Native women and women of color, there's really hardly anything out there about these experiences. And, of course, we know miscarriage is very common, you know, up to a third of women in the U.S. are going to experience a miscarriage at some point, and we just don't talk about it. So you go through a traumatic experience like miscarriage or infant loss, and again, it's already very difficult, and then you make an already difficult situation even more difficult by feeling completely alone by the lack of discourse around that. So this project is really, you know, a way to challenge that and to change that.
Shannon, as you approached this project, and obviously feeling as though this was a need, this was something that you really felt the loss of, is support, is what I mean, and the ability to be with other people and empathize with what they were going through and have someone echoing an experience similar to yours. But in order to do a project like this book, you basically had to put out a call for, hey, would you like to talk about perhaps one of the most wrenching and painful and devastating experiences of your life? What was that like?
Yeah, I mean, Kalia and I, when once we decided that we were going to do the project, I mean, we really didn't know what we were going to get. We also decided at the beginning that we wanted the anthology to be filled with not just first-person narratives about these experiences, but well-crafted and well-written. So with that, yeah, we just cast our nets far and wide, and we were very heartened, actually, to see that we weren't the only people. I mean, we were not the only women out there really searching for a place where we could express and examine these experiences. And so we actually ended up getting a lot of really amazing stories and narratives from women who'd gone through this.
So was it a challenge to try to craft an email or a letter to try to find these people, or did you have the sense that you knew what to say?
You know, some people were already in our circles, and we knew that they would write something really moving for us. Other people just got the call and came to us. But it was a process of, you know, again, we wanted the collection to be filled with excellent writing. Kelly and I, professional writers ourselves, but also this project is also a template for working through trauma, if you will. So, I remember one of our contributors, you know, you get the piece and then you give them comments or revisions. And this took her a while because she said, you know, I would go. She had her loss maybe 15, 20 years ago. And a lot of women, like a lot of us, you know, it's like something happens and you just keep moving forward because that's how you cope. And so she really hadn't investigated it since it happened. And she was like, you know, I go to my office every day with the intention of revising this piece. And I sit in front of my computer and I just cry for 2 hours. And so it took her, you know, much longer than she initially thought, than we initially thought, to get the revised draft together. But we just had to, you know, be patient, understand, and give guidance where needed. So that's really what we did.
Shannon, when we talk about Native women, and when we talk about women of color, people of color, we've had a lot of conversations on this show about how healthcare is frequently inadequate or non-existent where it's needed. Talk a little bit about what it must have been like for many of these people, because I would imagine that some of the women wondered, if I had been white, would my baby have lived? Would I have gotten different health care? Would things have turned out differently?
I mean, that's what you really encounter when you read through the various stories in the book. This is an intersectional experience, you know? It's not just about gender. It's not just about race. It's not just about class. It's not just about nationality or first language. It's about all of these things that sort of collide in this white Western male healthcare industry and structure to really create like and overdetermine these bad outcomes, maternal health outcomes for Native women and women of color. Of course, I'm sure, as you know, we have a huge Black maternal health crisis in this country. Definitely you see where there's, you know, one story, a woman, a Black woman, she had a doctor just did not want to even, she felt like, touch her, you know. She was sort of like disgusted with her. We have stories, also religion is a factor. We have stories from a Muslim woman who lost her baby, I think at maybe 20 to 30 weeks. And they talked to the religious leader in their community. And he was like, look, it's not a baby because it doesn't have a soul. So there's nothing we can do in terms of funeral rites or anything else. And she was completely devastated. So there's just, yes. There's a lot of things in these stories that, you know, you can connect to just on the level of being a human being and grief and trauma. And then there's, you know, sort of like other ways to sort of interpret and connect with the stories in terms of these systems of oppression, of which, you know, sadly, the healthcare industry is a major one. Yeah.
Shannon, I'm always curious about the role that our cultural, and I say our meaning very loosely, the white Scandinavian culture of silence. You don't talk about things, you put things away, you get over things by going back to work. You know, you go and make a big dinner, or you go back out into the fields, and that's how you cope with fill in the blank.
Yes.
This has become a way in our modern day and age where we are so profoundly unkind to one another, and yet that's not the way it was intended originally. I don't think that originally people thought they were being unkind. They thought it was the healthiest way and saving pain to do it this way. I always wonder about the role of that culture and the sense that, well, you're doing the kindest thing by not bringing this up to the woman. You're doing the nicest thing by not talking about it. And how we can do better moving forward now that we're getting to a place where people say we not only want to talk about the differences between us, but we need to talk about all of these different things.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of the shift is we have to become, as a culture, more comfortable being uncomfortable. You know, my mom is a therapist, and she frequently says, you know, we are a grief-averse culture. We just are, you know. And the thing is, grief is a part of life, you know. And we know this in just by being human beings, you know, that people do die, you know. That experience is going to be painful because, again, pain is a part of life, you know. But then the question is, what is the best way, the most humane way to deal with that pain, both individually and as a community? And of course, you know, numerous studies have shown that pretending that what's happening is not happening is not the best way to deal with pain, and that basically it's going to come out sideways. You know, in a lot of psychosomatic ways, in the body, in your relationships, in even your relationship to yourself, it just doesn't work. So, I mean, I think, you know, it's been really interesting. The book launched yesterday, and you know, Kalia and I have been saying that, you know, it's going to be kind of a slow burn. You know, it's really hard to hear these stories. And because it's just this raw, devastating pain, you know, to hear about somebody losing a child like this. But at the same time, it also connects you to, other people, just on the level of being a human, and then other people who've also had devastating losses as well. So in the stories, I mean, you'll read, you know, some women had people, you know, say these platitudes like, oh, yes, you know, time will heal all wounds. And, you know, you can always have another one. You know, that's another, you know, as if having another baby is going to, you know, ever
replace. As if it's like going to the store and getting another jar of olives off the shelf.
Yeah, that's not how it is, right? And so, again, there needs to be space to hold that grief. But in order to create that space, other people need to not be afraid of it. That's a big part of the work that we hope that the book can do, you know, is by putting these honest stories and narratives forward, people can feel less alone, women can feel less afraid, and communities can sort of, you know, start to talk about this issue of grief and trauma, which is just so foundational to being a human being and a woman. I mean, it was funny and ironic and really sad at the launch. One of our amazing contributors, Sun Young Shin, said, you know, still the only way that people come into the world is through women giving birth, right? The whole human species, that's how we come into the world. But nobody is interested, not even women, are really interested and what that experience means, what is our experience, what happens to us during that process, before that, after that process, and what are the ramifications? We, as a culture, we need to become much more interested and invested in that. Yeah.
Well, and Shannon, as they have since time immemorial, books offer us an opening. They offer us an opportunity in the silence of our own room, in the silence of our own mind, to read someone else's experience, to learn someone else's perspective and viewpoint, and assimilate someone else's experience. And we hope go forward changed or armed with new insights or new ideas or new words even. So books, of course, I think that's probably where it starts. Books are not confrontational for the most part, and books are a safe space in many instances to explore some of these new ideas. Thank you so much, not only for joining us this morning, but for you and your co-editor having the courage and the compassion for other women to say, we need to do this for everybody and to move forward with this project.
Yeah, it's been a very healing journey for all of us. We're very thankful. We feel called to this work, and we're very thankful to be able to do it. So thank you for helping us get the word out. We really appreciate it.
Shannon Gibney, our guest this morning on Minnesota Reads. She is the co-editor of a book called What God Is Honored Here, Writings on Miscarriage and Infant Loss by and for Native Women and Women of Color. The book is published by the University of Minnesota Press, and it includes a discussion guide. We'll have a link to that discussion guide set up, so it'll be easy for folks to find if they're looking for it. Minnesota Reads is produced at KUMD with funding provided in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.